The Prisoner Who Wore Glasses by Bessie Head. Scarcely a breath of wind disturbed the stillness of the day, and the long rows of cabbages were bright green in the sunlight. Large white clouds drifted slowly across the deep blue sky. Now and then they obscured the sun and caused a chill on the backs of the prisoners who had to work all day long in the cabbage field. This trick the clouds were playing with the sun eventually caused one of the prisoners who wore glasses to stop work, straighten up, and peer short-sightedly at them. He was a thin little fellow with a hollowed-out chest and comic knobbly knees. He also had a lot of fanciful ideas because he smiled at the clouds. "Perhaps they want me to send a message to the children," he thought tenderly, noting that the clouds were drifting in the direction of his home some 100 miles away. But before he could frame the message, the warder in charge of his workspan shouted,
"Hey, what you think you're doing, Brill?"
The prisoner swung round, blinking rapidly, yet at the same time sizing up the enemy. He was a new warder named Jacobus Stephanus Hanagie. His eyes were the color of the sky, but they were frightening. A simple, primitive, brutal soul gazed out of them. The prisoner bent down quickly, and a message was quietly passed down the line. "We're in for trouble this time, comrades." "Why?" rippled back up the line. "Because he's not human," the reply rippled down, and yet only the crunching of the spades as they turned over the earth disturbed the stillness. This particular work span was known as Span 1. It was composed of 10 men, and they were all political prisoners. They were grouped together for convenience, as if it was one of the prison regulations that no black warder should be in charge of a political prisoner, lest this prisoner convert him to his views. It never seemed to occur to the authorities that this very reasoning was the strength of Span 1 and a clue to the strange terror they aroused in the warders. As political prisoners, they were unlike the other prisoners in the sense that they felt no guilt, nor were they outcasts of society. All guilty men instinctively cower, which is why it was the kind of prison where men got knocked out cold with a blow at the back of the head from an iron bar. Up until the arrival of Warder Hanagie, no warder had dared beat any member of Span 1, and no warder had lasted more than a week with them. The battle was entirely psychological. Span 1 was assertive, and it was beyond the scope of white warders to handle assertive black men. Thus, Span 1 had got out of control. They were the best thieves and liars in the camp. They lived all day on raw cabbages. They chatted and smoked tobacco. And since they moved, thought, and acted as one, they had perfected every technique of group concealment. Trouble began that very day between Span 1 and Warder Hanagie. It was because of the short-sightedness of Brill. That was the nickname he was given in prison, as is the Afrikaans word for someone who wears glasses. Brill could never judge the approach of the prison gates, and on several previous occasions, he had munched on raw cabbages and dropped them almost at the feet of the warder, and all previous warders had overlooked this. Not so Warder Hanagie.
"Who dropped that cabbage?" he thundered.
Brill stepped out of line. "I did," he said meekly.
"All right," said Hanagie. "The whole span goes 3 miles off."
"But I told you I did it," Brill protested. The blood rushed to Warder Hanagie's face.
"Look here," he said. "I don't take orders from a Kaffir. I don't know what kind of Kaffir you think you are. Why don't you say boss? I'm your boss. Why don't you say boss, eh?"
Brill blinked his eyes rapidly, but by contrast, his voice was strangely calm. "I'm 20 years older than you," he said. It was the first thing that came to mind, but the comrades seemed to think it a huge joke. A twitter swept up the line. The next thing, Warder Hanagie whipped out a knob carry and gave Brill several blows to the head. What surprised his comrades was the speed with which Brill had removed his glasses, or else they would have been smashed to pieces on the ground. That evening in the cell, Brill was very apologetic. "I'm sorry, comrades," he said. "I've put you into a hell of a mess." "Never mind, brother," they said. "What happens to one of us happens to all." "I'll try to make up for it, comrades," he said. "I'll steal something so that you don't go hungry." Privately, Brill was very philosophical about his head wounds. It was the first time an act of violence had been perpetrated against him, but he had long been a witness of extreme, almost unbelievable human brutality. He had 12 children, and his mind traveled back that evening through the 16 years of bedlam in which he had lived. It had all happened in a small, drab, little three-bedroom house in a small, drab, little street in the Eastern Cape, and the children kept coming year after year because neither he nor Martha managed the contraceptives the right way, and a teacher's salary never allowing moving to a bigger house, and he was always taking exams to improve this salary, only to have it all eaten up by hungry mouths. Everything was pretty horrible, especially the way the children fought. They get hold of each other's heads and give them a good bashing against the wall. Martha gave up somewhere along the line, so they worked out a thing between them. The bashings, biting, and blood were to operate in full swing until he came home. He was to be the boogeyman, and when it worked, he never failed to have a sense of Godhead at the way in which his presence could change savages into fairly reasonable human beings. Yet somehow it was this chaos and mismanagement at the center of his life that drove him into politics. It was really an ordered, beautiful world with just a few basic slogans to learn, along with the rights of mankind. At one stage, before things became very bad, there were conferences to attend, all very far away from home. "Let's face it," he thought ruefully. "I'm only learning right now what it means to be a politician. All this while I've been running away from Martha and the kids." And the pain in his head brought a hard lump to his throat. That was what the children did to each other daily, and Martha wasn't managing. And if Warder Hanegier had not interrupted him that morning, he would have sent the following message. "Be good, comrades, my children. Cooperate, then life will run smoothly." The next day, Warder Hanegier caught this old man with 12 children stealing grapes from the farm shed. There were an enormous quantity of grapes in a 10-gallon tin, and for this misdeed, the old man spent a week in the isolation cell. In fact, Span 1 as a whole was in constant trouble. Warder Hanegier seemed to have eyes at the back of his head. He uncovered the trick about the cabbages, how they were split in two with the spade and immediately covered with earth and then unearthed again and eaten with split-second timing. He found out how tobacco smoke was beaten into the ground, and he found out how conversations were whispered down the wind. For about 2 weeks, Span 1 lived in acute misery. The cabbages, tobacco, and conversations had been the pivot of jail life to them. Then one evening, they noticed that their good old comrade who wore the glasses was looking rather pleased with himself. He pulled out a 4-ounce packet of tobacco by way of explanation, and the comrades fell upon it with great greed. Brill merely smiled. After all, he was the father of many children. But when the last shred had disappeared, it occurred to the comrades that they ought to be puzzled. Someone said, "I say, brother, we're watched like hawks these days. Where did you get the tobacco?" "Hanegier gave it to me," said Brill. There was a long silence. Into it dropped a quiet bombshell. "I saw Hanegier in the shed today," and the failing eyesight blinked rapidly. "I caught him in the act of stealing 5 bags of fertilizer, and he bribed me to keep my mouth shut." There was another long silence. "Prison is an evil life," Brill continued, apparently discussing some irrelevant matter. "It makes a man contemplate all kinds of evil deeds." He held out his hand and closed it. "You know, comrades," he said, "I've got Hanegier. I'll betray him tomorrow." Everyone began talking at once. "Forget it, brother. You'll get shot," Brill laughed. "I won't," he said. "This is what I mean about evil. I am a father of children, and I saw today that Hanegier is just a child and stupidly truthful. I'm going to punish him severely because we need a good warder." The following day, with Brill as witness, Hanegier confessed to the theft of the fertilizer and was fined a large sum of money. From then on, Span 1 did very much as they pleased, while Warder Hanegier stood by and said nothing. But it was Brill who carried this to extremes. One day at the close of work, Warder Hanegier said, "Brill, pick up my jacket and carry it back to the camp." "But nothing in the regulations says I'm your servant, Hanegier," Brill replied coolly. "I've told you not to call me Hanegier. You must say boss." But Warder Hanegier's voice lacked conviction. In turn, Brill squinted up at him. "I'll tell you something about this boss business, Hanegier," he said.
One of these days, we are going to run the country. You are going to clean my car. Now, I have a 15-year-old son, and I'd die of shame if you had to tell him that I ever called you boss. Warder Hannah G.A. went red in the face and picked up his coat. On another occasion, Brill was seen to be walking about the prison yard, openly smoking tobacco. On being taken before the prison commander, he claimed to have received the tobacco from Warder Hannah G.A. All throughout the tirade from his chief, Warder Hannah G.A. failed to defend himself, but his nerve broke completely. He called Brill to one side. "Brill," he said, "this thing between you and me must end. You may not know it, but I have a wife and children, and you're driving me to suicide." "Why don't you like your own medicine, Hannah G.A.?" Brill asked quietly. "I can give you anything you want," Warder Hannah G.A. said in desperation. "It's not only me, but the whole of Span 1," said Brill cunningly. "The whole of Span 1 wants something from you." Warder Hannah G.A. brightened with relief. "I think I can manage if it's tobacco you want," he said. Brill looked at him, for the first time struck with pity and guilt. He wondered if he had carried the whole business too far. The man was really a child. "It's not tobacco we want, but you," he said. "We want you on our side. We want a good warder, because without a good warder, we won't be able to manage the long stretch ahead." Warder Hannah G.A. interpreted this request in his own fashion, and his interpretation of what was good and human often left the prisoners of Span 1 speechless with surprise. He had a way of slipping off his revolver and picking up a spade and digging alongside Span 1. He had a way of producing unheard of luxuries like boiled eggs from his farm nearby and things like cigarettes, and Span 1 responded nobly and got the reputation of being the best work span in the camp. And it wasn't only taken from their side. They were awfully good at stealing commodities like fertilizer, which were needed on the farm of Warder Hannah G.A.